Welcome to The Internet Work, a podcast made by medical residents meant to serve you better on the wards and on call. Today, we bring you an extra special edition of Ask a Fellow in collaboration with NEF Madness. NEF Madness is an annual online American Journal of Kidney Disease sponsored CME/MOC granting evidence-based learning initiative that leverages the tools of social media to teach about the latest breakthroughs in the field of nephrology. It's mirrored after the March Madness NCAA college basketball tournament. So throughout the month of March, 16 hot topics in nephrology, though there's often overlap with many specialties, are pitted against each other in a bracket. During March, participants read blog posts that have been prepared on each team and fill out a bracket to predict which team will win each matchup, ultimately choosing one topic to win. So today, I'm here with Dr. Jeffrey Cott and Dr. Caitlin Vlashart to dive into the world of hyponatremia correction rates. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm a second-year internal medicine resident at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
And hi, I'm Jeff. I'm a current critical care medicine fellow at Stony Brook Medicine on Long Island, and I finished my nephrology fellowship at Mount Sinai in Manhattan, and I'm part of the NEF Madness Executive Committee.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us today. Super excited to be doing this. Caitlin, why don't you kick us off with the first question?
So when it comes to hyponatremia and osmotic demyelination syndrome, how did we get here?
Yeah, sure. So the first cases of ODS were actually reported back in the late 1950s. And if you actually look at the case reports, they're mostly in people with alcohol use disorder, had associated malnourishment. The case reports actually didn't mention sodium, which is kind of interesting. And the osmotic demyelination syndrome was actually diagnosed in postmortem. In the 1980s, rat studies actually were the first really actually linked hyponatremia to ODS. And there was actually a little bit of controversy to this at the time. The experts really thought it was really more to hypoxia driven. But ultimately, studies found that correlation between ODS and sodium, specifically hyponatremia and a correction of hyponatremia greater than 12 milliequivalents per liter in 24 hours in those with severe hyponatremia. So some of these studies had subsets of patients who actually corrected less than 10 in 24 hours. However, ultimately, studies found a correlation between ODS and correction of hyponatremia greater than 12 milliequivalents per liter in 24 hours, especially in those with severe hyponatremia, defined as less than 105. Some of these studies actually had subsets of patients who corrected less than 10 milliequivalents per 24 hours. And in this population, there were no patients who had cases of ODS. But what they really found was faster the sodium rises, the higher the risk of ODS you have. There have been many studies since then, but the bottom line is essentially that high rate of correction of sodium within 24 hours can cause ODS. Now, ODS, classically, when we're taught it in medical school, we're taught that it presents as locked-in syndrome. There's no specific timeline. It can actually happen, you know, weeks after. But typically, we'll say it happens 2 to 6 days after the overcorrection. But I think the interesting thing that we have to point out is it doesn't have to necessarily be locked-in syndrome. There's a lot of findings that you can have all within the neurologic system. But I think what's interesting is that imaging doesn't always find it. CT imaging actually misses a lot of the lesions, especially early on. MRI can as well. So these studies that are ultimately, we'll talk about, that are ultimately looking at osmotic demyelination syndrome, some of them will use imaging, but it's possible that imaging just might be missing it.
That's so interesting. I had no idea about the history of it. And it's a really good example of how like some pretty limited evidence has had such a huge influence on practice and opinion, right? So in that vein, what do the guidelines say? I know that in the hyponatremia episode, we touch on this, but why don't you walk us through the various guidelines and their recommendations?
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple different guidelines. The European guidelines advise essentially limiting correction of hyponatremia by 10 milliequivalents per liter on the first day and 8 on subsequent days. The American guidelines recommend correcting chronic hyponatremia. And I should actually step back for a second because we should, you know, define acute hyponatremia less than 48 hours can be corrected quickly. All of these recommendations are referring to chronic. Mm. But the American guidelines recommend correcting chronic hyponatremia less than 120 by 10 to 12 in the first 24 hours. And then a total of 18 at 48 hours, but no slower than 4 to 8 milliequivalents per 24 hours. For high-risk patients, which they define as alcohol use disorder, hypokalemia, malnutrition, or advanced liver disease, they actually suggest lowering the rate of correction, as these, again, people are high-risk for ODS. So for them, they're saying a maximum rate of 8 in 24, minimum of around 4 to 6. And for severe symptoms, as you know, severe neurologic symptoms, seizure, coma, that's when we just want to get the sodium up quickly. They recommend bolusing hypertonic saline to get by, you know, around 5 mil equivalents in the next few hours, just to kind of make those symptoms subside. There also are some expert recommendations, which I think is, at least in my fellowship, was really what we're following mostly. We kind of want to correct less than 8 mil equivalents per 24 hours and around 16 to 18 in 48 hours.
So it sounds like there have been a few studies recently that have sort of put those guidelines or kind of conventional wisdom into question. And I guess that's why it's being discussed at NF Madness this year, is because it's such a hot topic. Do you mind walking us through some of the latest studies and the newest data in this area?
Sure. So there's been three big ones that have been released in the past year. The first study was McMillan et al., which was a retrospective cohort study with almost 23,000 patients actually in Toronto area hospitals with a sodium less than 130. Only about 1.2% of this population had a severe hyponatremia, which in this case we'll say was less than 110. About 12% had a sodium between 111 and 120. So most of this cohort was really greater than 120. They essentially identified no imaging results in chart reviewed. That was how they found ODS. And what they found was that almost 20% of the population had a correction of greater than 8 millimoles per day, including 69% of the severe hyponatremia, the sodium less than 110 cohort. But only 12 total individuals were found to have a ODS of the entire cohort, 7 of whom actually were corrected at a rate less than the expert recommendations, less than 8 milliequivalents per liter. So the characteristics of those who developed ODS were a sodium less than 110, hypokalemia. Those are the big ones that we've kind of already known from prior studies, but you know, this study kind of corroborated that. So the bottom line for this study was that overcorrection happens, but ODS is incredibly rare. Again, 12 individuals out of almost 23,000. So, and it even happened in some people without overcorrection.
I find it wild that we spend so much time and energy thinking about it, and then just to see the rate at which it happens being so low is pretty interesting. Why don't you take us through the next one?
Yeah, sure. So the next one was a study by Kinoshita et al. It was much smaller, retrospective, multicenter of about 1,000 patients that were admitted to ICUs with sodium less than 120. So again, we're already kind of in that population that maybe is a little bit higher risk to begin with for ODS. And the goal of this study was actually to evaluate in-hospital mortality in slow versus rapid correctors, with 8 being the cutoff of rapid correction. Length of stay and neurologic outcomes were evaluated as well. In this, 44% of the population actually rapidly corrected, and the slower correction group had significantly higher in-hospital mortality, around 13.4% versus 8.4%, and less hospital-free days without significant differences in neurologic complications. And in this, again, cohort of almost 1,000, there were actually no reported cases of ODS. So the bottom line for this one was, one, we're not very good at correcting at the appropriate rate, and two, the people that were corrected slower actually had higher mortality and were in the hospital longer.
Definitely a surprise to many, I'm sure. What about the third one?
Sure. So the last one was by Sitapathy et al. It was a slightly larger multicenter retrospective cohort, almost 3,300 patients with severe hyponatremia, again, less than 120. And they looked at varying rates of correction, so less than 6, 6 to 10, greater than 10 per 24 hours, with the outcomes of mortality, length of stay, and ODS. Ultimately, the breakdowns in rates of correction were about, you know, a third in each group, give or take, you know, 5%. But what they found was, again, slower correction was associated with higher in-hospital mortality and 30-day mortality, while correction rate greater than 10 was associated with lower mortality and shorter length of stay. ODS was found in 7 individuals, again, of about 3,300, 5 of whom actually, again, corrected at the appropriate rate, less than 8 in 24 hours. And 6 of the 7 who developed ODS had alcohol use disorder, hypokalemia, and evidence of malnutrition. So again, the subset of population that we know develops ODS was majority of the population who developed it in this study.
Wow, so this is some pretty fascinating data that, again, think turns on its head our conventional wisdom. So based on these studies, should we be rethinking our rate of correction?
Yeah, it's honestly sparked a very fascinating debate within the nephrology community, because these are, as you said, some pretty interesting, it's interesting data. But as always, it's not so simple. These are retrospective studies with varying size. Ethically, we'll never be able to do a slow versus fast randomized control trial, given just the really scariness that is ODS, especially locked-in syndrome. Though there is a actual slow versus standard of care that's going on. So obviously, it's important to have all the data, but there were some issues with these studies, as there are with every study. So first, hyponatremia tends to be a side effect of an underlying disease, whether it be cirrhosis or low solute or SIDH. So is it really truly fair to say that mortality and length of stay are actually a function of a hyponatremia, or is it really more of a function of the underlying disease process that leads to hyponatremia? And I will say anecdotally, some hyponatremias are just more difficult to correct than others, cirrhosis being one of those, and people with cirrhosis have incredibly high mortality to begin with. So if we're saying that the mortality difference is, in people who are just sicker, that can obviously is a limitation. With respect to the first paper, which again was that big cohort study, almost 23,000 patients, neuroradiology was used to diagnose ODS. As I kind of alluded to before, the timing of findings can be delayed, and it also can be missed early on. So the follow-up period was about 7 days post-discharge in that first study. It may have just been that we didn't have a long enough follow-up period to actually catch every ODS that there was from a radiographic standpoint. But the other important thing is that ODS is a clinical syndrome as opposed to a radiographic diagnosis. So that is a limitation with that study. The second part is the denominator is actually large. So there was a significant portion of the individuals that were just not imaged. So if you do discard those, since neuroimaging was one of their criteria for finding ODS, it's still a low rate of ODS, but it is obviously higher than they reported. And then the third problem with it was, of all the patients who developed ODS, some of the greater than 120 group, which is not a group that we usually think of as developing osmotic demyelination syndrome. Again, we said usually it's severe hyponatremia or some kind of comorbidity that predisposes them to it. But they actually didn't, the ones that had developed ODS in the greater than 120 group without correction in the first 24, without overcorrection in the first 24 hours, developed hyponatremia within 2 to 11 days. And what's, I think, really important about development of ODS is it's really more about the rise in sodium. It's not necessarily just about going from low to high. You can go from, or going from really low to less low. It can be going from mildly low to very high. So, you could go from 134 to 160 in a day, and that can develop, predispose you to ODS. So it's really more about the rise in sodium from baseline or from where you're starting. And then the last, part of the study that maybe we could nitpick is there were some statistical decisions that actually may have led to overdiagnosis of overcorrection. They actually had a 6-hour time buffer on each side of the overcorrection of the 24 hours, excuse me. So, you could always nitpick the statistics in this paper that could also, be found as a limitation. With respect to the other two papers, slower correction will obviously lead to a longer length of stay. Sometimes if the lower they're starting, the longer they just may need to be in the hospital if you're appropriately correcting based on the guidelines. And again, I mentioned this before, but slower correction may just be a function of worse underlying disease.
Okay, and so taking into account these new findings, these new studies, and kind of conventional wisdom, how we've always been doing it, there's sort of two sides and maybe evolving, how we may be approaching hyponatremia in the future. But what do you think is the current takeaway and what we should be retaining from all of this?
Yeah, sure. So I think these retrospective studies have certainly framed an argument that maybe there's a cohort of people that we can just correct. We don't have to worry about the risk of ODS. Obviously, we don't want to, again, go from like really low to really high, but there are maybe some people that we can correct a little quicker. So, these studies confirm some risk factors for ODS, again, hypokalemia, alcohol use disorder, and malnutrition. So those people, we should still take their risk very seriously and maybe correct them a little bit more carefully. I don't know if I'm fully ready to go on board with rapid correction, because obviously this is a, as I said earlier, a devastating consequence, ODS. But I think if it were to happen where you like just slightly overcorrect, like let's say 9 in 24 hours instead of 8 in 24 hours in a lower risk population, I probably wouldn't jump to intervene. You can always hit that, like, you know, 16 in 48 hours is the next benchmark. So I think there's more studies that have to be done. It'll be interesting to see kind of what additional research comes out in the future. But I would actually, you know, just given the nature of the tournament, love to hear what your guys' opinions on this would be, if you guys would be interested in correcting a little quicker.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say definitely now I'll be looking out for the other risk factors that you point out, like the hypokalemia, what their sort of reason for hyponatremia is, if there's any alcohol use disorder or malnutrition underlying it. And yeah, especially in those people, keeping a much closer eye on the sodium, but generally, or I guess maybe a more liberal or faster rate of correction may, yeah, I won't, I guess, worry as much when I'm on call looking after these people all night.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of your points, and I think the risk factors are probably, as you've already said, the biggest takeaway. Maybe I'm a bit of a contrarian, but I would not be surprised if we see, in light of this, studies come up looking at like a faster correction rate. Because, I mean, we kind of said like, oh, well, we know that going faster is bad. But I mean, some of these studies, like the data is super mixed. And so I think you could make an ethical argument. I mean, no one's going to be okay with going from 110 to 140, I think, in 2 hours. I think that would make everyone super, super nervous. But I'd be willing to bet money that someone would be able to get it by an ethics board to say, you know, when we look at the foundation of where this guidance came from and how shaky it is, and now we're seeing these, granted, retrospective, but massive cohort studies, maybe it merits reevaluation of some of what is probably a medical dogma rather than evidence. So I think it's an interesting space to keep an eye on. I mean, no one ever wants to be the first straying into unknown territory. So I can't say that I'm going to be the person that's like, yeah, have at her. Let's just correct them as fast as possible based on these studies. But I agree that it'll be maybe a little bit less nerve wracking when you see, you know, okay, they corrected by 14. It's probably, as opposed to 12, it's not the end of the world, you know? Beautiful. Anything else in light of that, though? Anything for us to take away, Jia?
No, I appreciate you guys having us on. You know, I definitely encourage you guys or everyone to read Neff Manis articles on the subject and all the Neff Manis articles on the alternative topics, which there are many, whether you're a nephrologist or internist or subspecialist. Because there's a lot of relevant information that you can incorporate to your practice, regardless of specialty.
Neff Madness is always so much fun to watch as it blows up. And there are some heated debates, I find, over the panel decisions versus the popular votes. So I'm excited to see how it plays out this year and to see who the ultimate winner is, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be this year.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time. We really, really appreciate it. We will make sure for everyone listening that you obviously can find the Neff Madness links on the website and also the links to the articles so you can read them and follow along. Thanks again, Jeff and Caitlin.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.